KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
Well, happy Friday, everybody. This is Jim Williams with you. Your good friend Steve Ryman will be back with you Tuesday next week. He's been off all week. I hope he's been enjoying being out of the station. I know he's actually working at the National Broadcasters, so he's not taking a vacation. He's working hard to bring better radio. Do you miss him?
Absolutely. he told me he was going up to, what is it, Nashville?
Yeah. NRB, oh, the National Radio.
Right. So yeah. It's good.
Well, and Paul Gessing is our guest today, and it's interesting. I don't know if we want to finish up your week by hearing about the New Mexico legislative session over the last 30 days, but that's what we're going to do today, and our good friend Paul Gessing is going to give you three perspectives. Tell us what those are.
Well, we always do a good, bad, and ugly apologies to Clint Eastwood. Good things that happened in the session, bad things that happened in the session, and things that were too ugly even for New Mexico's legislature. So we'll talk about the good, bad, and the ugly in Santa Fe from the 30-day session that just wrapped up yesterday.
Paul, I'm going to say hike, and the ball's yours, my friend.
All right. Well, hopefully we don't have any turnovers or fumbles. I believe Tim Walz fumbled a reference to that during the campaign, if I'm not mistaken. But let's start off with the good, as we are wont to do with the good, bad, and the ugly. First and foremost, the best thing that happened in this legislative session is one of the best things that's happened, quite frankly, legislatively in my time in New Mexico dealing with the legislature. And that's 20 years, so that's a good long time to watch and see what has happened over the years. HB 99, medical malpractice reform. It was a long, strange trip. I know referencing now the Grateful Dead on that one, but it was a bill that was a widely held priority on both sides of the aisle. I think it's safe to say that Republicans were pretty much game for whatever happened. Christine Chandler, a state rep from Los Alamos, was the lead sponsor. Gail Armstrong was the co-sponsor. And the idea was to place a $6 million cap on medical malpractice throughout the state of New Mexico. It hit its first committee, the House Health Committee, chaired by Liz Thompson and a handful of other progressives on that committee, decided that they were going to limit the scope of that bill to only about five hospitals in the state of New Mexico. For all intents and purposes, I considered that a horrible amendment to the bill. It then moved on to the House Judiciary Committee, where, and I'm giving you the blow-by-blow on this one because it's so crazy and so important, that committee stripped out that amendment and passed it along on a unanimous vote. Side note, Javier Martinez, the Speaker of the House, during that committee hearing, touted Cuban healthcare and said that the American healthcare model's fatal flaw, its original sin, was the fact that it's for-profit, and made a big statement about that. You can go to heirsofenchantment.com. I have the video from that particular hearing with Javier Martinez, the Speaker of the House, saying all those things. So that was quite a moment, but moved on. House floor overwhelmingly voted for it. Then HB 99 came into the Senate Judiciary, and this is the committee of all the trial attorneys. It's kind of the trial attorney committee in the Senate, headed by Joe Cervantes of Las Cruces, Peter Wirth, the majority leader of the Senate, right there, and then Katie Duhigg, another trial attorney. Amazingly enough, not surprisingly, though, they gave a bunch of amendments, put it, weighted it down, this legislation, with a bunch of things that I think they thought would just kill it by slow death, and it wouldn't ultimately make its way through. Well, it made its way through to the Senate. All of those amendments were stripped out. Now we have a three-tier system of medical malpractice that is either signed or on its way to be signed by the governor, who has said she's very, you know, she wants this very much. So kudos to her for that. The three tiers are for $1 million, $6 million, and $15 million, and it depends on the size and provenance of the healthcare entity that where they're going to be covered under that. If they're out of state for profit, high level, they're going to be under the highest cap, $15 million. and so on down to individual practitioners for $1 million. So,
and Paul, this is designed so that medical malpractice insurance is more affordable?
It's designed for that. It's designed so that more doctors will come here, so that you won't have this cottage industry of trial attorneys coming to New Mexico and suing our medical professionals. Ultimately, this is designed to make New Mexico a more attractive place for medical professionals to do business. It is a significant step in the right direction, more than a starting point. It doesn't solve everything with our medical provider shortage, but it is a big deal and something that Rio Grande Foundation and lots of other organizations on both sides of the aisle supported. You know, just to give you an extreme example, this bill was supported by Planned Parenthood and the Conference of Catholic Bishops. So you get all the political spectrum under this bill. The only people who didn't support it, really, and you saw this if you went up there or listened in on committees, was the trial attorneys. They would show up and people would ask them their affiliation, or they would give their affiliation, and they would say, I represent trial attorney law firm X, Y, and Z, or I represent some firm that's supported by the trial attorneys. It was really a all-hands-on-deck effort in the legislature, and thankfully, it got through.
I love it. And that's one component of bringing mm-hmm. back healthcare workers. Yep. I know you've been working hard on this for at least a year, maybe two.
Yeah.
Because we've had a number of different factors. Now, I know Fred Nathan with Think New Mexico mm-hmm. Shared this with us last year mm-hmm. at the session. There was a provision made with a permanent fund to increase Medicaid reimbursement mm-hmm. rates. That wasn't your favorite thing, nope. but it passed. Mm-hmm. Was more funding allocated to that this year, do you know?
No, that's a permanent fund. I mean, there will be money flowing into that naturally. Okay. Fred and Think New Mexico, really great organization, have on this issue worked very, very hard, and it's successfully, at least on this particular issue. But Fred and I generally agree that more needs to be done, and I think our organizations agree broadly on things like gross receipts tax reform for medical professionals and other ways that we need to attract them to our state. Disagree with him on Medicaid. I think Medicaid needs to be dialed back. But
you personally think, mm-hmm. And I don't disagree, especially now that a lot of federal government agencies have come out and exposed the level of fraud with mm-hmm. Medicaid, you believe there's a lot of that going on in New Mexico.
It's not just about the fraud, though. It's about the disincentives to work mm-hmm. and the also when it comes to the medical provider shortage. The doctors don't like receiving Medicaid because it doesn't pay out as high of a ratio. The legislature has pumped a lot of money into that, but that is money that could be used for more productive purposes in the state of New Mexico. Putting more New Mexicans on a government welfare program, which is what Medicaid is, they call it insurance coverage. It's not insurance, it's a welfare program, and it's 3/4 funded in New Mexico by the federal government, with 1/4 of that money coming from the state. So we're also kind of bankrupting Washington, D.C., which happens to be, $33 trillion in debt, which is a real issue as well. So the mentality in New Mexico has been pump up Medicaid spending because we do get this 3-to-1 match, which sounds great until you realize that it's killing our workforce participation rates and it's not really resulting in better outcomes for average New Mexicans.
So we're going to do a little bit more of this analysis. My bad, taking us off in the weeds. We want to cover the good.
Yeah.
And then we want to talk about the bad and then the ugly, and then we'll do some analysis afterwards.
Absolutely. There's only really one more big good thing that happened, and those are the compacts for medical providers as well. Specifically, the one that passed that was important is on doctors. There was one on social workers. That's okay. We're glad to have them. There's about 7 or 8 or so other medical provider compacts that exist. Many of those passed the House, but the Senate did not bring those up, and I believe that was those folks on the Judiciary Committee. But the Medical Provider Compact for Doctors allows two things. It allows doctors to come here without having to go through the entire process of being licensed in New Mexico. So if they're in one of the other compact states, they can physically come here and shift their practice. More importantly and more commonly is they can do telemedicine in the state of New Mexico now without any obstacles. And that is an increasing area of medicine. It's something that took off really during COVID, and it's a very good thing to have more doctors available to New Mexicans.
Since we're the only state to have lost doctors, close to 300 since 2019, having doctors available for telehealth for maybe less critical kinds of care will help us immediately.
Absolutely.
I love that.
That's the good stuff.
Now the bad.
Yes. All right. This is a slightly lengthier number of bills. I hate to break it to you. I would say that the very worst bill that passed is the free child care that the governor championed before the session and actually put into place before the session. This is a starting cost of $850 million. The idea is to take free child care for everybody. That's the new law in New Mexico. Originally, before the governor used kind of her executive power to put New Mexico on this path on November 1st of last year, 400% of the federal poverty level was the limit for people to access free child care. Now that cap has been raised, which on its face right there, I thought that was a strange thing for the governor to do, because normally, as a progressive, you would be hoping to help the lower income people. This is helping the highest income New Mexicans by removing that 400% cap. That 400% of the federal poverty level is about $128,000 for a family of four. So it's a significant amount of money for New Mexico families. So now you can make $500,000, $1 million, and still access this free childcare, which, again, pretty bizarre.
But it also takes care of the people that are maybe making $20,000 or $30,000.
But those were already taken care of under the previous. This had been in existence since 2022.
Wow.
So this legislation had its own little hiccups along the way. The legislative budget was not as generous with money towards it. So before each session, the governor and the legislature both put budgets forth. The legislature did not give in that original budget the full amount of money. Then that came to be during the session. Amendments were added to put copays in place so that families accessing this program would be at a higher income level would have to pay some money up front to the provider. That was stripped out. Basically, the governor got what she wanted. And this is going to be a hugely expensive proposition. Representative Rebecca Dow told me that she expects within 3 to 4 years, this is going to cost $3 billion for the state of New Mexico annually. And the way that they are doing this, it's not sneaky in the sense that they're not doing anything that's illegal, but we are taking federal funds, we're taking general funds, and mostly we're taking funds out of a permanent fund, one of many permanent funds that the state has, thanks to the oil and gas industry, thanks to them not giving it to us and instead keeping it for themselves in these permanent funds. And then that is being used as a primary vehicle for funding this new program. So I always tell people, permanent funds are just deferred spending. They may not be spent right now, but they are only increasing the size and scope of government over time, and we need to avoid that. So that's obviously a tool that they were able to use, though, to get this passed.
Paul Gessing is the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. They are a local think tank. They promote liberty and prosperity for all New Mexicans by educating citizens on the importance of individual freedom, limited government, and economic opportunity. Paul's a fellow believer in the Lord, and he also believes that basketball is God's anointed game, which I totally agree with. We're going to be back, and when we come back, we're going to allow Paul to talk more about the bad bills that were passed. There's a longer list than the good bills, and then we're going to talk about the ones thanking the Lord that they didn't make it through.
You got it.
We'll be back after these messages. I can't resist temptation. Jim Williams with you today on ABQ Connect with our good friend Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul, can I tease you for a second?
Sure.
So a lot of things you're talking about, you are really concerned with fiscal responsibility in the state of New Mexico and how we spend money. So you have a couple of children, you give them $50 for an allowance. Are you requiring them to submit documentation how they spend that money?
No. Although one of them now has a job, so working at Dion's. So she's just turned 16, so earning her own paycheck.
I can only imagine the reporting that your children have to do about their allowance to dad and mom.
Oh, they're doing okay. Yeah, we still pick up most of the tab for all that. But it's nothing quite as rewarding as having kids.
So we got one bad thing addressed, and that's the universal health care. Now, there's going to be some pushback from people that I didn't know this, but you said that there was already a provision for health care for lower income families in the state.
Child care. Up to 400% of the federal poverty level already existed as of 2022.
Okay.
And there's a couple of loose ends that are worth tying up. One is Minnesota, which of course was an issue and something kind of starting out the new year. The Leering centers down in up in Minnesota, I should say, they are just federally funded. They have a copay of 150% at 150% of the federal poverty level. We're way more ambitious by standard deviations, more generous and ambitious than Minnesota was.
So right now, almost every income level gets free child care.
Before this law takes effect, yeah, it's already a very generous program, yes.
Wow.
I firmly believe that this is a legacy-building project of the governor. She's failed with CYFD to improve the lives of her children. She's failed with her high school and K-12 system to improve the lives of our children with lots and lots of money added to that system. So she's looking for national headlines and kind of a card to play for potential future offices that she may or may not run for, but I believe she will run for something in the not too distant future. And she wants to have that accomplishment by her name.
Tell us about some more of the bills that are giving you trepidation.
The next one is the tax bill, SB 151. Now, I will not go into all the details. This is perhaps the most complicated bill, but we can reserve judgment on that. So every session, not every, but generally speaking, there is a tax bill considered in the legislature. It's unique in the sense that the tax committees work differently from every other committee. So you have a House Tax Committee and a Senate Tax Committee. They have hearings on any bill that impacts revenues up or down one way or the other. It's a tax cut. It's a tax increase. They table them immediately, and then they have discussions behind closed doors about what a tax bill would look like. So that tax bill that then this SB 151 is actually multiple different bills placed under one overall bill. So the bills that are placed under the bigger bill are just concepts, legislative language, and so they have different impacts financially on we the people of in New Mexico. SB 151 overall is a bad bill. We rated it poorly in our Freedom Index because the first thing that it does and the most important thing that it does financially is it does what's called decoupling New Mexico from federal corporate tax provisions. So the big, beautiful bill, remember that, at the federal level, passed back in May. It contained provisions that put New Mexico and other states on a trajectory for lower corporate income taxes due to things like depreciation and very complicated concepts. But ultimately, what people need to know is that this would have been a $110, $120 million annual reduction in the corporate income tax in New Mexico, which corporate income taxes are widely considered to be the most harmful form of tax economically to the development of a state economy. So it's a big tax increase right off the bat. There were other provisions added in, some of which were good, some of which were bad. But overall, the bill as it passed is still a significant tax increase. There's a tax credit for doctors up to $10,000 annually. That's a good thing. There's a tax credit for journalists and newspapers. I don't like that. There's other provisions that are contained in the bill. Continuation of a high wage tax credit. Okay, fine. But on the whole, it is still a tax increase. It is economically harmful to New Mexico diversifying its economy at a time when we're doing things like passing free childcare at a cost of hundreds of millions, billions of dollars, other provisions that the legislature and the governor passed that are increasing spending. We should have gone along with the big, beautiful bill and reduced our corporate income tax. We should not have a corporate income tax in New Mexico. It's one of a handful of taxes that could easily be reduced to the point of elimination here in the state of New Mexico, and it would help us diversify and grow our economy.
And when you say grow our economy, what you really mean is we could attract small and large corporations to locate in the state.
Yeah, New Mexico currently has zero Fortune 500 companies headquartered here. We're notoriously a state that is not attractive for businesses to form and develop here. Essentially, you get to a certain point and you go and incorporate and move your headquarters to some other place if you have indeed started in New Mexico, or more likely, it's another big corporation from outside New Mexico that just buys our businesses if they want them. But ultimately, we're just a state that has dedicated itself over decades and decades to depending heavily on the oil and gas industry and the federal government. And that is what we do in the state of New Mexico. And this directly infringes on efforts to diversify and grow that economy, that private sector, which we really need in the state.
Any more bad?
Oh, unfortunately, yes. So SB 2 is a road bill that does contain $1.5 billion for roads, but at a time when we've had major budget surpluses to the tune of $3 billion annually in recent years, and we still have a ton of money sloshing around in Santa Fe, including $7.2 billion in unspent capital outlay, we could and should be using existing money for road improvements, which we all, I believe, need in the state of New Mexico. We all recognize that. But unfortunately, the weight distance tax on commercial truckers is going to go up 35% due to this bill, SB 2. And your car registration is going to go up 25% under this legislation, which is totally unnecessary. Now, there is a good provision in addition to the road money. They are going to finally, for the first time ever, impose a fee on Teslas and other electric vehicles, $70 starting out in 2027, $90 by 2029. It's something. It's a step in the right direction. Electric vehicle users should pay something for the upkeep of the roads. It's not as high of a rate as other states have in place. $130 is about the average, and it doesn't adjust to inflation, which is part of the problem with the gas tax that funds the roads also, but it is a starting point.
I love it. I love it. Are we ready for the ugly?
Nope, one more. There is HB 9. That's the bill that shuts down all of the ICE facilities prohibits local governments in New Mexico from contracting with them. Now, you certainly, from the Democrats' perspective, this is being driven by the Trump administration and ICE and what they've been doing with regard to immigration. Now, whether you agree or disagree with that, there are 1,000 jobs in New Mexico that are at stake if these facilities are shut down. There's three of them in three different counties across our state. None of them right here in Albuquerque. There's Torrance County, I believe McKinley County, and there's one down in Otero County. And that is a lot of jobs that are going to be lost and a lot of tax revenues and money that we're foregoing. And are we really going to affect the Trump administration's immigration policy? I don't think that is going to be changed. They're just going to move to other states like Texas and Arizona or whatever and have those facilities there. So kind of a not a great thing for those 1,000 people, for sure, and the counties, many of which are kind of economically challenged in their own ways. It would be great to have those jobs still in effect.
I love it. Paul Gessing is the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. You can go to riograndefoundation.org, and you can also go to errorsofenchantment.com, errorsofenchantment.com, where the blog posts are. Paul, you have very strong opinions about things that you think.
Mm-hmm.
But just like we tell people all the time that have a pastor that teaches a certain thing, don't just believe what people say. Go in, read the Bible for yourself, find out the information. Be as the Bereans. Go out and do some homework. Paul, you approach this the same way. You provide a plethora of information. So let's end this segment. You're going to be with us till 2, mm-hmm. but let's end this segment by you talking about your websites and the resources available for free to people.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Heirs of Enchantment and the Freedom Index at riograndefoundation.org. We do track the bills that are voted on in Santa Fe. We also rate them on a +8 to -8 rubric based on their overall impact on New Mexicans and their freedoms. So a really bad bill hits the floor. It's got a -8 associated with it. Legislators vote yes or no on that, and they get that score. They get +8 for voting against a bad bill. They get -8 when they vote for a bad bill, and vice versa. And then we put those scores together for those legislators. And at the end of the session, they have a final score associated with their votes. It's not totally finalized yet, but I would say it's 99% of the way there. I haven't gone through and confirmed that we've got everything locked down in terms of the way those bills are rated, but very, very close. What I can tell you kind of trends-wise is that the House passed a number of those compacts. They passed like 7 or 8 compacts, which then went over to the Senate mostly to die. So you have a number of Democrats, including progressives in the House, that have relatively decent scores in our Freedom Index that they typically would not in a normal year, but because they voted on a lot of bills that were rated, we rated the compacts as +4. So that's a pretty healthy vote total for those. And, you have Republicans, conservatives, moderates, et cetera, in both houses. In the Senate, it's a much more kind of diverse approach. It's more of the typical approach where you have the progressive Democrats have really, really bad scores. Moderate Democrats, say like a guy like George Munoz, Senate Finance Committee chair, has a moderate score. And then you have the usual divergence among the Republican members of the legislature there as very positive scores.
Paul Gessing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation, summarizing the good, the bad, and the ugly of the 2026 New Mexico legislative session. He'll have more for us. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. We're with Paul Gessing this afternoon on ABQ Connect. Paul regularly contributes to our program. He's been a friend of our station now. I think I started 9 years ago, Paul, and one of the first people I called was you. Our good friend Steve McKee said, well, you got to talk to Paul because Paul has great perspectives on all of this. But I want to encourage people, use what Paul says to stimulate you doing just a little bit of research. Paul, it's not that much work to find out who's running. We have a primary coming up.
Yep.
And then we have a governor's election and some other things. So talk about the importance of voting.
Well, before we get there, I'll talk about the importance of information. So go to the Freedom Index at the riograndefoundation.org website. Look through for perhaps your legislators and look through the votes. Especially look through, compare your legislators versus the other members of the House and the other members of the Senate. That you have to compare like versus like, House and Senate. Go to heirsofenchantment.com and read articles and information there. And then check out our podcast, Tipping Point New Mexico, as well. I've talked to several candidates for governor in both parties. And, just ask them basic questions. What do you want to do if you're elected? Why do you think you're the best person to be governor of New Mexico? And those kinds of things. And you can share this information with your friends and family members because it is so important to turn New Mexico around. And how do we turn this state around? It is at the ballot box. I always tell people that, you know, these legislators, you can go, you can lobby them, you can speak in committee, you can email them, you can text them, even if you have their cell number. But really, they are elected, and they feel like whatever they ran on when they were elected, they can feel comfortable pushing those policies because that's what they got elected on, and the people obviously support that to an extent in their district, so they're going to keep doing what they're doing. And until New Mexicans decide on a wide variety of issues like the economy, like the education system, like crime, like CYFD, just all of these things that I think hold us back as a state, the people who run the show here, the legislature, the governor, our congressional delegation is up. There's a lot of people that think this. People are happy. They keep reelecting me. So yeah, we got to change that, and that's done at the voting booth.
Well, and I don't want anybody to get mad, but I don't mind chewing out the faith community. It is a fact that only 50% of the faith community is registered to vote. And the irony is when it comes election time, especially primaries, less than half of those registered voters actually vote.
I would also say that we obviously have a volatile and perhaps even uncomfortable situation for some at the federal, you know, highest offices in our country. But where you can actually make the difference is last December, municipal elections, the runoff for mayor. That's where we need people to show up to vote in numbers, because not only can the faith community move the needle, they can win or lose elections for candidates based on just their turnout in a city of Albuquerque election, for example. Or coming up, you know, we have primaries in June, and then we have the general election in November. We have governor's race. We have U.S. Senate race, although it's touch and go as to whether we'll have a candidate. There'll be a candidate to oppose Ben Ray Lujan in that. The New Mexico House of Representatives will be up, and changing that body would fundamentally transform New Mexico. So Secretary of State, a bunch of other statewide offices as well, including our congressional members, the three members of the House are all up. So another opportunity for us to move the needle and for the faith community get out and show up in big numbers and make their voices heard as well.
So, Paul, we've talked about the good of the legislative session, yep. And you said that, you know, everything having to do with bringing doctors back to the state was really good, maybe better than you've ever seen in your 20 years.
Yeah. Now, we have plenty more to do. Gross receipts tax remains an obstacle. Our high income tax rates for high earners in particular, doctors are high earners. Medical professionals are high earners because they're highly trained and they're very qualified and they can go wherever they want to. But yeah, we have more to do on that issue, but at least it puts us in the game, stops the bleeding, metaphorical and perhaps real, in the medical provider category.
Well, and you spent a little time in our second segment talking about the bad, the bills that did pass and are now going into law, will be signed or are already signed. That you don't feel are good. And now we're going to talk about the ugly, the things where we wipe our brow and say, thank you, Lord, that these things did not happen.
Yeah, perhaps the worst bill I've ever seen in Santa Fe was SB 18. It was so-called Net Zero or Clear Horizons is the name they gave it. But it was a net zero bill. Net zero is a concept by which a given jurisdiction, could be political, could be whatever, eliminates their CO2 emissions. And by 2050, this bill, if it had become law, would have theoretically forced New Mexico to completely eliminate CO2 emissions. It would have started by 2030 with a 45% reduction in CO2 emissions, and by 2040, 75% reduction in CO2 emissions. So what do I think about this? Well, I think it would have never actually happened, but we would have spent trillions, or at least billions of dollars to try to implement this, to kill our economy, to kill the oil and gas industry, all for what? Well, if you look at a chart of CO2 emissions by nation, the United States has been declining for basically 20 years. China, on the other hand, has been growing massively in recent decades. New Mexico, of course, is a small percentage overall of the U.S. Economy and CO2 emissions. If you eliminated New Mexico from any CO2 emissions, it would be lost in the wash. It's certainly not going to make a difference for the U.S. economy or for global CO2 emissions. It's just complete and total virtue signaling. And so, thankfully, SB 18 died on the Senate floor on a bipartisan vote. I know, you know, there's people all over the Democratic Party who oppose this on the Senate side, but right here in Albuquerque, Martin Hickey and Mo Maestas both stepped up and voted with the Republicans to kill SB 18 on the floor of the Senate.
But Paul, I've seen things in New Mexico about, yeah, we shouldn't have cattle because they have too high a CO2 emissions. Mm-hmm. I mean, science, in my opinion, doesn't support any of that. The carbon dioxide in its presence is actually used by plants. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's all kinds of debates about this whole climate change thing that starts to make me think about some of the things in the food pyramid and what Health and Human Services has come up with. They've debunked so many things now that were so-called scientific about the way we eat. And I think climate change is kind of the same thing. There's been financial motivations to be deceptive in all of these areas. And I'm glad that there's finally some people scrutinizing all of this.
Well, I do something called stay in my lane, which is I don't go and analyze the CO2 emissions and whether that's impacting our weather and how much of an impact that is and how big of a deal that is. I focus on what we know and what we don't know about the impact of these pieces of legislation. I did tell the Senate Commerce Committee, Conservation Committee, when I was able to testify to them, I said, rather than virtue signaling about stuff that could happen by 2050, why don't you get involved in supporting the nuclear power industry right here in New Mexico? The Energy Transition Act of 2019, which is, in my estimation, the worst bill that we've seen out of this administration, Lujan Grisham, that specifically eliminated nuclear power from New Mexico's energy portfolio. We need to be judicious about getting New Mexico into the game nuclear power-wise, which can also positively impact other aspects of our economy, including, obviously, CO2 emissions being part of that. But if you are able to do widespread development of good, low-cost, very reliable power, that is where your sweet spot is, and that'll help your economy over time because we have these data centers. Now, they've got a whole different thing. We can talk about that briefly with the microgrids, but nuclear is the way to go if you're concerned about carbon emissions and having a powered Western civilization. You need to do both. Now, natural gas is better than coal, half the CO2 emissions right there, and we did transition through that a little bit, but we should have focused as a state through the Energy Transition Act on natural gas and deploying that as a bridge fuel to nuclear. That should be the game plan.
Well, and Paul, I don't know the details, but maybe we'll make it a priority of this show to get some people on. I know you'll probably do it with Errors of Enchantment and Tipping Point, but there are people right now that are taking nuclear waste and they have reactors now that will use the spent nuclear waste to actually produce more power. And at the end of the whole thing, the half-life and all of the radiation is gone.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of amazing ways that nuclear can be done and improved constantly. And I think small modular reactors are one component of that. There's a wide variety of ways that nuclear is, I think, being revisited by a lot of folks, especially in the environmental community. But this is one where a lot of folks left, right, and center can agree that it's worth going down the nuclear path again.
Paul, last question for this segment, and it's not on our list. Do you think New Mexico could take the lead on topics like we're talking about right now? I mean, we have two national labs. We know a lot about nuclear power and energy and weapons and all this kind of stuff. We could take the lead on this, couldn't we?
Well, remember that conversation we had about the faith community and voting and how you elect your politicians? We need to elect different politicians in order for New Mexico to lead. So far, during 8 years of Lujan Grisham, she's been just doing this cradle-to-career concept and expanding the number of people who access various government programs. I don't think it's going to succeed. I don't think we're going to move the needle in terms of improved outcomes for New Mexicans, children, crime, all the issues that hold us back. We're just putting more and more people on the government dole, and that is not the way forward.
Paul, I have so much fun talking to you. Our time goes very quickly. We're only going to have one more, like, 12-minute segment, so let's take a break, say thank you to our sponsors. I hope you'll keep listening. We'll be right back on ABQ Connect. Happy Friday. Still a little bit windy outside and a little bit chilly. I don't know how anybody's walking around with shorts. I see all kinds of people still working out. I'm one of those sissies that needs to be inside. Of course, I was raised playing basketball, Paul. Mm-hmm. 72 degrees, no wind, no rain, man.
Well, for those of us who played basketball outdoors, you are a little more liberal, shall we say, in the conditions you play in. But definitely wind is a no-no when you're trying to play hoops outside. It might shoot that three-pointer a little bit away from the intended destination. And that makes things not so fun for you playing basketball outside.
I love it. Paul Gessing is president of the Rio Grande Foundation. 20-plus years, Paul, serving in New Mexico?
It'll be 20 years in March. March 6th of 2006 was my first real day at the Rio Grande Foundation.
So. That's really neat. I appreciate your serving. Mm-hmm. TippingPointNewMexico.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's the blog.
TippingPointNM, but yes.
Okay, TippingPointNM.com. Yep. And there's Paul really indexes those. He says the number of the podcast and everything. He also has errorsofenchantment.com, and then his website is riograndefoundation.org. We've been talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly, the New Mexico legislative session that just ended yesterday at noon. Paul, we still have some ugly. Wipe our brow and thank the Lord they didn't happen.
Exactly. The fact that they were introduced is often concern enough, but we just got done talking about SB 18, which was a net zero CO2 emissions bill. Really, really awful bill. Glad that one failed. Related to that, SB 235, which was called the Microgrid Oversight Bill. Now, people out there listening have probably heard talk of data centers and the jobs that they'll bring, the electricity in particular that they'll use. Now, last session, we have to reference last session. Unbeknownst to us, we were not focused on this issue, but there was a bill passed last session to give these data centers and other facilities like them that use a lot of electricity the ability to set up their own what's called a microgrid, which essentially is there's one data center that's going in Santa Teresa. And just to give you an idea how much electricity we're talking about Metro Albuquerque, Metro Las Cruces, and all the electricity they use in one facility that has to be always 100% on, because this is a data center that's going to form the backbone of AI applications and ultimately the internet. Santa Teresa's got one of these going in right now. There's one in Roswell. There's one in Lee County down in the southeast part of the state. And then there's also one in Las Lunas that's going to be expanded. Facebook has had theirs for several years. So this microgrid bill, among its many provisions, the one that passed and is the law from last year, essentially gave these facilities a bit of a loophole under the Energy Transition Act of 2019, which takes New Mexico over the next decade or so to zero emissions for electricity alone. Now, that is a huge push in and of itself. I don't think it's realistic in the sense that it'll happen, or ultimately we'll have electricity outages and whatnot, which these data centers are going to be huge construction projects, large number of people working at them and diversifying our economy and growing the number of people who have jobs, pay, support their families in New Mexico. So SB 235, this session, introduced by Senator Jeff Steinborn, a very progressive Democrat from Las Cruces, he said, I don't want these facilities to be exempt from this aspect of the Energy Transition Act. I want to force them to use wind and solar and batteries right now. And basically, that would kill them, I believe. I don't know how many of these facilities would stay in New Mexico because the amount of wind and solar, the space that that would physically take, the batteries, I just don't think they would be comfortable keeping the lights on or the data centers running under that plan. Maybe down the road they'll get, you know, small modular reactors and other consistent forms of electricity to fuel these places. But the good news from the previous bill last session was that New Mexico is not dumping these facilities on the grid that we all used and jacking up prices on our power bills. That was a very good part of that original legislation. Most of these facilities are going to be using natural gas powered plants, which can remain always on. You don't have to worry about the wind not blowing or the sun not shining. You just have these natural gas plants, which are keeping these facilities going. And again, thankfully, this bill, it passed the Senate, but failed ultimately. And that's a victory for economic development, jobs in New Mexico, and just diversifying our economy.
Paul, do enough good things happen politically in our state to keep you motivated that you're accomplishing something as you move forward?
Obviously, I've been doing it for 20 years. I enjoy the work. I am a curious person, as you can imagine, looking through all these bills and figuring out what's going on and trying to gain an understanding of whether this is good for the people of New Mexico or bad. I wish more good things happened. I still think we did more harm than good overall in this session, even with the passage of the medical malpractice bills and some of the positives that happened. We just need a philosophical revolution in New Mexico and our legislature that we support individual liberty, not government. We want to pour money into government. We want government to make all the decisions for us. We want to do what's best for the individual. We want to have a strong education system. We want to address crime. We want to do the things that make New Mexico a better place to live and be. We have all the tools, more tools than most states have. Our weather, today being a possible exception, is among the best in the entire country. There is no reason why, as the Census Bureau pointed out, that we are one of five states losing population as of this past year, 2025. We should be a state that is just top of the charts in so many ways because we have that potential. We're a unique cultural milieu. We have the mountains. We have skiing. We have opportunities for outdoor recreation. The sunsets are unparalleled. The people are great, as long as they're not the ones voting for the baddies and those baddies. There's just so much potential here. I believe it's the state with the most potential of any in the country.
And are the solutions complicated, or will they just require hard work?
There's a little bit of both. Mostly it involves electing good people who care about individual liberty and getting the most out of humanity in this state, our human resources, our children, making sure that they're well taken care of, not by some faceless bureaucrat in a daycare center, but by the moms and the dads who have the most at stake with those kids. So it's not complicated. It's just about getting involved in the process. And I think we've presented a lot of ways that people can do that here on this show.
Paul, thanks so much for joining us on ABQ Connect.
Thanks, Jim.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.